I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello and welcome to an unexpected pre-Christmas espresso episode. I'm joined by Sam. Hey, Sam.
Hey there, Matt.
And as I said, it's unexpected because we originally didn't want to do a pre-Christmas espresso. We thought, you know, it's before Christmas, everyone's really busy. And you've heard us enough this year, haven't you? But then we realized, no, you haven't. And also, we realized that, you know, we did one main episode in December on Wicked Part 1. And since Wicked Part 2, Wicked for Good, came out, it would be a shame not to talk about that one. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I was very excited, especially after our episode on Anything Oz, that we could come back to Wicked for Good. It was the week before it came out. And of course, I was very hyped to go and see it. So yeah, I thought it would definitely be a good idea. And here we are.
Absolutely. And it gives me a chance to say something about Wicked because I wasn't in that last episode. Let's perhaps just very quickly recap. What was your opinion for those who perhaps don't remember the December episode in every detail? What was your opinion of the first Wicked movie?
You know, I went into it with trepidation because everybody had hyped it so much. And it was this very Instagrammable press tour between Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo and the other cast members that kind of made me feel maybe this is just over-advertised and the movie experience will just not be as good. It cannot live up to this. Plus, I had not particularly liked or remembered the Wicked musical experience back in London in the early 2010s. And it made me a little cautious because I thought, this wasn't a very memorable musical, so is it going to be a good film? Can it be a good film adaptation? I had no memories of any of the songs. I didn't go back and listen. And I thought, okay, everybody's talking about it. Everybody seems to like it a lot. I'm going to go see it. And I really liked it. It really lived up to all the hype. I thought this origin story of the two witches was involving from the very start. It's basically a high school movie for witches and wizards. It had a tinge of the Sex Education, you know, kind of the Netflix generation adaptation of this type of story. It had great songs. It built up to a fantastic finale. I did get the hints about The Wizard of Oz, even though I hadn't seen the original film very often. And I thought it was a great cinematic experience. Visually, the cast was great. They were in great shape. The voices, the performances. I was really enthralled, and many people around me were as well. It seemed to be one of those post-pandemic, get back to the cinema experiences. You have to see this and experience this with other people. And that was Wicked Part 1 for me. How about you? Did you have similar trepidations and similar experiences?
Yes and no. I mean, I'd seen the stage version about 15 years ago in London. And the thing is, I remember really enjoying it, but I didn't remember any details. And to some extent, that's a bad sign. You know, I remember enjoying the spectacle. I remember being totally in it. But I think the only thing I half remembered was, yeah, kind of the first act ends on Defying Gravity. And I could remember two or three bars of Defying Gravity, but not the entire song, which compared to other musicals where the songs have really stayed with me, you know, from the first viewing onwards, I don't know what it is that made me enjoy it, but not remember it. So going into the film, I think I was a bit like you. I also thought that some of the praise was perhaps too hypey and perhaps also a bit too, I don't know, teenage enthusiasm. Where I thought, you know, perhaps I'm too old for this. And then when I came out of the film, I have to say I didn't like it all that much, while at the same time thinking some of it was extremely good. I mean, obviously, I think the key performances by, as you said, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande are fantastic. The chemistry between them in the first film is great. There are some smashing songs in this film and some smashing stagings of songs, in particular the ones between the two leads. I'm thinking, for instance, of Popular, where you really, you know, these stagings play off the chemistry between the two, use the music well and everything. But at the same time, I felt that some songs were staged in a way that, to me, in the cinematography and the editing, had little feel for the rhythm or choreography, especially scenes where you had kind of lots of people dancing. And they were usually in the background, you've got people dancing, so you don't get a sense of the choreography, you don't get a sense for the rhythm. in the editing as well. And I thought that Defying Gravity, while it is absolutely the standout song of this film and of the musical, I really disliked how it keeps getting broken up. You know, they sing a couple of bars and then they run up some stairs and then there's this bit with the balloon and then they continue singing. And because of that, I felt that very often the build-up that's inherent to these songs was undermined by how it's put in film. I think all in all, I mean, I also thought it was too long, especially considering that it's just half a story. I felt a bit like The Grinch, you know, it also came around last year, just around Christmas, and I felt like everyone loves it, and I'm there going like, I'm not sure it's that good. But at the same time, I did think that the two leads made it work well, especially when they're together, especially in the comedic parts, but also just in the chemistry between them that is, I think, very strong and very palpable. And in a way, that's also what I was hoping for the second half, because I think Wicked is one of those musicals that's famous for people saying, yeah, the second act is basically much, much weaker. And I already thought, okay, if you cut the second act into its own film, and it's weaker, how can they save that? And I thought, it's again the leads that could potentially save it. What were your expectations going into part two?
Well, as you, I thought the core of this film are the two leads. I think the dynamic between them, their story, the buildup of that story, that's central. So I was looking forward to where that is going. Because as I said, I didn't remember how exactly that played out in the musical. And I thought, okay, I have high hopes that these two great players that were so fantastic, that even overcame, as you said, the weaknesses of the music, the staging, the material at hand, that they would somehow carry the second part as well. But I had heard the same thing. I had heard these opinions of people saying, well, that after the intermission, there's not really any more great songs. So I was also a bit cautious and I thought, well, have they maybe written a couple of new songs for it, which has happened in the past? Are they going to have some reprises of the famous songs from the first part? And I guess also curious, because we had just recently discussed Wizard of Oz, how would the Wizard of Oz play into it? Because I had only half remembered it, and now with all these elements in place, I thought, okay, is it going to be as independent from the Wizard of Oz material as I thought or maybe even hoped? Because I think the strength of Wicked Part 1 is basically that it's something else. It's a story of friendship and of, you know, budding love of two friends that are opposites, should be enemies, and this within this teenage-y context of this school. And I thought that's great material, but will they have to follow too much maybe the formula of the musical or the film that the musical is based on? So those were kind of my fears and expectations.
I think for me it was very much the same. It's also, I think, the first part where it worked best for me was exactly this kind of high school drama thing, because it's not just high school drama, it's also high school comedy. It's kind of, it's goofy with it, it's funny. And I think it's exactly that, it doesn't take itself too seriously all the time. That made it work. That also made the more dramatic moments in the first part stand out. Songs like, as I said, Popular, the one where they basically both sing about how much they loathe one another, and that then building up to the dancing in the club, you know, the illegal club, the illicit club, where, you know, suddenly it goes very quiet and very serious, and it works, because before that we had comedy, we had kind of repartee, we had screwball, and suddenly it was serious and that worked. But the second part is basically serious, you know, shit becomes real, so to speak. And I was worried that exactly that would basically lose the film its charm. And I have to say, to some extent, I think that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask, how did that play out for you, sitting in part two in For Good and having these expectations? Did they play out just as you thought, or even worse?
Sadly, yes. I mean, it's not like I sat there wanting it to be bad. I wanted the good things to still come out. I wanted there to be, if it becomes dramatic, I wanted the drama to have real heft and weight, but I still wanted the charm and the lightness and the chemistry that was there. And I think the problem is really that the material doesn't really allow for that, but the filmmaking also doesn't have any idea how to deal with the weaknesses of the material. I don't know whether you listened to Mark Kermode's review of Wicked for Good. he felt that people, you know, criticized that the second part is too dark. And the thing is, I don't think that's it. The second part tries to be dark. It tries to be all about, you know, the coming of fascism and all of that. And the problem is, I don't think the material or the writing is good enough to give that substance. So what we get is kind of very pantomime fascism. In a way, it's ironic because, I mean, Wicked sets out to rewrite the black and white, simplistic, you know, morality of The Wizard of Oz. But I think it just replaces it with a different kind of black and white, simplistic morality where, you know, the baddies are boo and hissable. And they should be because they are fascists, yes, but they're cartoon fascists. If it tries to rewrite this into something more nuanced, I don't think it succeeds. What about you?
To me, it felt like a deflated balloon. You know, something that had blown up to such height and, you know, it was soaring in the first part. And then in the second part, I literally sat for, I think, up until the Swiss intermission and nothing really like soared off the ground. Everything kind of stayed flat. I think beginning with the pseudo darkness that you mentioned, this build up of this regime. I thought the interesting touch at the beginning with the building of the yellow brick road, for instance, was such an interesting beginning. And I thought, oh yeah, they're really going to go into the nitty gritty detail of how Oz is built. But then the intrigue of that power grab by Mrs. Morrible and the wizard, it never really felt threatening at all, nor did the flying monkeys anymore after a while. And they were extremely, you know, menacing in part one, I thought, towards the end or up until the end. And then it was just very piecemeal. It fell into short little scenes where songs were replayed for a couple of moments. Again, no big numbers, no big stagings yet. And they tried to somehow piece together all the characters and the elements, some minor characters that I had completely forgotten in the meantime that had not been so memorable apparently. And somehow nothing really, I was always waiting for, okay, now the first great song. Now the build-up is going to add up to something dramatic or dramatically satisfying. And it just didn't. And by the intermission, I sat there and I thought, wow, how can a movie that was such a joy to watch for me last year, and it should technically be just a continuation of that, how can that feel so empty? So nowhere to go in a way. And I was dreading the second part a little bit because I kind of felt, where is this about to go? I could see some things happening with regard to the Wizard of Oz references. And I thought, okay, maybe something interesting would happen towards the end. But I was a little anxious and a little, wouldn't say downright bored, but a little disillusioned.
Absolutely. Even though it was shorter than the first film, it felt longer to me, definitely. And also because, as you said, you know, it's, I think it doesn't really build up much of a story arc. So it also doesn't get you excited. It doesn't get you thrilled or scared. You just sit there and go like, okay, now we get this, now we get that. Some of that I really do think is just that the material is weaker in the second part. But do you think it would have been better for this to just be one film? Do you think that would have helped part two?
I mean, one film in the sense of that there shouldn't have been a second one. I think if they had just left it with like defying gravity, and that would have been the end of it. Of course, I mean, it's built up with the expectation, you know, people have to come back. And I think they came back in droves because the finale of part one was so good. But technically, you should have just said, okay, we're not going to make a second movie. Everybody would have begged them to make a second movie, but I don't think putting those two movies together and cutting them down to maybe, I don't know, 3 hours would have made the second part much better. I think it would have probably ended in a mediocre to good movie experience altogether. And people and critics would have probably said, well, yeah, it's great in the first half, but then really deflates in the second. So I think the issue is not necessarily the two films, unless they would have really built it up with much more, I don't know, consequential energy throughout up until the big finale that isn't really there. But do you think that would have saved it?
I don't think it would have saved it. I think it would have made it a bit more palatable, perhaps, because if I watch two films, even if they're two parts of a whole story, I expect each film to kind of be satisfying. And as its own film, it definitely isn't satisfying. If it was part of a larger story, I think what could help is it would simply have to be shortened, you know. It couldn't be a 1 5-hour movie. So they would have had to bring it back down to the length of the stage version. And because of that, because if its short trip wouldn't insist so much on its clunky plot, it wouldn't insist so much on its set pieces. And because of that, I think it would end up being less disappointing, but it would not end up being good. So I agree with you. If they'd smushed this into one film, which I think is what the material needs, if anything, it would have still basically ended up with as you said, now we have one film that is quite beloved of lots of people and one film where people say, was that it? And otherwise you would have had one film where people said, it's kind of nice at the beginning. Perhaps we just stop playing it once they get to Defying Gravity. So I think what they would have needed to do to properly save it would have really been to look at what are the weaknesses of the story in part two and rewrite it. And I guess that's where it's a problem because, you know, Wicked is a beloved musical that people go and see it. There's, I don't know what fans are called. Are they called Wicked Heads or I don't know. And that also means that, you know, if you've got that kind of fans and then you go and change it, even if you change it for good, pun intended, people would still say, but that's not the musical. That's not the original. So I think they would have had to have very, very good ideas of how to address the weaknesses of the second film. And what we get suggests that they had no idea. I'm not even sure they knew that those were weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. I think fan service is a good keyword here, right? They had the fan service they had to pay to the people who loved the first Wicked movie. But then also, of course, previously they had to do fan service to the fans of the musical. And in addition to that, the fans of The Wizard of Oz. So maybe this is also a little bit of a conundrum that they couldn't figure out. And I think, yeah, to the first part's detriment, I think the weakness of the second part somehow also now tainted my experience of the first one. I was kind of wondering, because I hadn't rewatched it, I'd only seen it that one time at the cinema, would I feel the same way now seeing the first part, knowing what's to come? And that's always so sad. I've had it with other films as well, where after the second part, yeah, just the quality of the first one somehow deflated or news things suddenly that you just had imagined previously. And now someone tries to tell you this is what happened when it's not what you kind of want to happen. So that's also something I felt was such a shame that I might not even watch the first part anymore. And definitely not the two parts in a row, because yeah, the second one had been such a, should I say disappointment? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's probably the classic example of a disappointment, right?
I mean, it's also definitely what I felt from the other people at the cinema when I went to see it. I had the impression that there were lots of people around me who were also kind of decades younger than me, who were probably more in the kind of target audience for Wicked to begin with, close in age to at least young Elphaba and Glinda. And I had the impression at the beginning of the film, they were really excited. You know, I'm looking forward to what's going to come in part two. By the end of it, you basically had all of these kind of muted voices around me going like, was that it? To some extent, I actually have to say that because I didn't like part one all that much when I first watched it, finding that I really disliked part two gave me more respect for the parts of part one that I liked. I mean, I think especially with, you know, with the two leads, I think it is a major problem that you basically keep them apart for so much of the musical when so much of the first film is the two of them together, and the two of them together just spark off each other. Take that away and you've got one or two set pieces where they're together, but little of that charm. It's that disappointment, but also what you also have hinted at already. The Wizard of Oz, I think, is an elephant in the room here. Obviously, this is a rewriting or it's fan fiction or whatever you want to call it. It's a revisionist take on the original material. But I really think that it was especially the connections to The Wizard of Oz that really made the second film clunky.
There were moments, I remember, when the house fell on, you know, the Wicked Witch. That's the start of Dorothy's path into Oz. I was confused and worried at the same time, because I felt, oh no, now they're going to do this by the numbers, right? Now they have to bring in certain elements and characters and events from The Wizard of Oz that I had just seen, and I was very familiar with what's to come. And instead of joy of like seeing how this plays out, how Dorothy would be brought in and her three companions, and then how that would interact with the story of the two main characters, I was literally just hoping this would go by quickly and wouldn't be a big thing, and was kind of a disturbance And also knowing how the Wicked Witch of the West dies in the film and thinking, okay, how are they going to play this out with Cynthia Erivo's character, who's such a different Wicked Witch than in The Wizard of Oz, right? It's like worlds apart. So it was a bad fit, I thought, and at the same time, I knew what was coming, and I was not happy with it. It's not like in other examples where you have all these references that excites you, right? You know that this is coming. Here, I thought, oh no, oh no, oh no.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if you have this kind of revisionist take, I think it has to be clever or witty or charming or really, really smart and incisive. It has to say something about the material that it's riffing on. But I think that here the only thing it says is there's such a thing as the Wizard of Oz, so we have these plot points that we have to tick off one by one. And it's just, I could imagine a version of this that would have wit, that would have charm, that would also accept that, you know, the Wizard of Oz is in a way a pantomime. It is something that's not got the weight or the kind of the substance or the depth to be critiqued properly, because it's not meant to be. I mean, the Wicked Witch of the West, as you said last time, she's a ha 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 cackling witch. And either you accept that and you kind of enjoy it or you do something with it, but you can't critique it the way they do, because they try to do something deep and meaningful about fascism and about using symbols of fear or whatever. And the material is just, it doesn't sustain it, I think.
It's taking it too far, right? I was never thinking, now rewatching Wizard of Oz, it had other problems. We talked about the Munchkin problem. We talked about, you know, some of the material, some of the musical problems that the film has. But it never struck me as a film that was particularly critiquable or political or problematic as to deserve such a reworking and rewriting. I think, yeah, do I don't know, some other material that would be worthwhile, but not this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that, as you said, the first part, it was far enough removed from the original material that you could see the references, you could see the riffs, and you could enjoy them, but they were not a liability. You know, you didn't feel like you had a checklist of this plot point and that plot point and Tin Man and Scarecrow and Cowardly Lion. And it just feels so crowbarred in. I mean, the way they bring in the Cowardly Lion and why is he scared of the witch and why does he want to go and kill her? It feels ridiculous. It feels like someone who had run out of ideas and then he basically just said, oh, well, the first thing I come up with is this. In the first part, the characters work because the characters are free to do what they want. In the second part, it feels like the characters are forced into this kind of fatalistic, you have to fulfill these plot points because nothing else matters. And that renders the characters, I think, boring and inert.
And, you know, the other, and I think related point that you already alluded to somewhat is the lack of any hummable, memorable song in the second part. You might argue, well, this For Good song at the end, it's very nicely in a nice musical reunion and finale between the two main characters. It's okay. It's like, it's, I guess, within the movie, it's the strongest song, but I don't remember any of the other songs. I remember there was a love duet between Cynthia Erivo and Jonathan Bailey at one point. There were bits and pieces from the first part. There was a nicely staged song where Ariana Grande is constantly reflecting herself in mirrors and then the camera kind of twists around. I thought that was interestingly staged, at least. But come on, I mean, did they not have the rights to Over the Rainbow or Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead? I guess not. Or could they not have done like a big musical finale where at least some of the highlights of the entire musical would have come back? It felt like they were not quite sure what to do with their own good material that they had used, and now to bring it back to sparkle, even if it's just like a little bit of, you know, musical encore at the end. Just do something like that. But they didn't. So they obviously didn't quite know how to bring this to a satisfying end themselves. I was quite curious how, you know, the production history of that went down. Were they under time constraints, too many expectations, too many people who tried to influence this? It might be an interesting story to tell at a later stage.
Mm, absolutely. I think they were aware that the songs were just not that good in the second part, and that's why you get two original songs. But the original songs that they have, like so often, I can't remember any kind of original songs in film versions of musicals or remakes of animated films. where the new songs are actually memorable. They always end up being filler material, and then you really wonder why even do it. I have to say, I kind of like No Good Deed, you know, basically where Elphaba says, well, if they want me to be a villain, I'll go villain. That had a certain kind of over-the-top melodramatic, okay, I'm going to give them hell if that's what they want. And it's also one of the standout moments, I think, for Cynthia Erivo. But other than that, I agree. It's the musical bits that stood out for me more were really, sometimes there's echoes of songs from the first one, you know, the Dancing Through Life or Popular or Defying Gravity. When they came, I thought like, oh yeah, there were those other songs. They were in the first part. Damn. So I agree with you. I do think they needed to rework it. I do think that even if the second part is supposedly darker, more serious, they still needed at least some kind of fun. It could even be more sarcastic fun. Let's think of The Lion King, where you've got, you know, what is it? The villain's song there.
Beware.
Beware. Which, you know, it's still a fun song, but it's a fun song about the coming of fascism. So that's an example where it works. You know, you sit there and you think, okay, it works on a dramatic level, but it also works as a song. And here it's all just somber and moody, but not in a good way. It's all the, you know, the big drama, but no wit, no sparkle.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the main thing I took away from it. How can you have something that has so much promise, you know, build it up so little in the course of another two and a half hour film, and then somehow not think at one point, well, let's bring at least back the big hits from the first part. Even in like flashbacks, they had the rights to all these songs, right? They could have somehow inserted them again and somehow, I don't know, create some kind of an extra scene that would have been worthwhile. And I think one of the things that also didn't quite work was that somehow the trailer had already given away this big musical moment with the For Good song. And I was kind of sitting there and thought, well, this is like rewatching the trailer for the end of a movie, and there's not much more than that. So again, in terms of like strategy, marketing, it's not a very good thing to do, right? To give away your best bit and then just to let people sit with not much else.
I mean, what I'm thinking right now is, you know, if you want to be kind of revisionist of material that's been there, I could totally imagine how they could have taken some of the fun songs like Popular, like Loathing, and given them a different spin for part two, you know? How now these two characters loathe each other for different and much more serious reasons, or how now Glinda is popular, but perhaps she doesn't actually want to be popular anymore. You could have done something, but I think it would have really taken the courage to say the material is flawed. Part two, act two has issues. And in order to resolve those, you don't just add new boring songs. You don't just make it into its separate film and make it 2.5 hours or something. You have to rewrite, and they didn't do that. It's in a way a shame, because I think the promise that is there in the first part, the talent that is clearly there in the first part, would have been so much better served by a part two that basically dares to say, yeah, what we have here is not that great. Let's rewrite it.
Mm-hmm. Lightning in a bottle, I think that's what happened with part one. And it reminded me of a very different part two that I saw this year, which did something truly original and unexpected. It was Joker Folie à Deux, that also disappointed a lot of people. I loved it. I thought, maybe I wasn't the biggest fan of part one, but I thought, wow, making this into like a daring, dark musical that is not really at all like part one and giving it such a different twist, that was a part two that I cheered for. And I thought, okay, yeah, you can go against expectations. Joker people will be disappointed, and I think they were probably more disappointed than they had wished for. But this was just almost the opposite. This was not like fulfilling something they had to do, and almost feeling as if they had run out of steam, out of the magic that they had or conjured up for part one. But yeah, those part twos, part ones, they play out differently. Some of them just don't need this separation, and others should really think of what they have to offer, unless they just really want to bring back people to the cinema and make some money off of them. If that's the goal, then I'm sure Wicked did a great job of making all these Wicked hungry fans want to go back, but give them a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So as always with something like this, I think, I mean, at least financially, the first couple of weekends were still successful. There's definitely a bunch of fans who still love the second film because that's, you know, they're fans. That's what they do. There is obviously talk of, you know, will this continue? Will they make more films? There's nothing been announced yet, but there is material because I think Gregory Maguire, who wrote the original novel, wrote more books. And while the musical is very different from the original book, there is material there. There have been other writings and rewritings of Oz. Do you think they will continue this, spin it out into some kind of franchise? Or do you think they'll be smart enough not to?
I guess it will depend on really what the returns of Wicked for Good will be financially. I think in our environment, it seems very likely that they will try to make some kind of spin-off, maybe in the form of a streaming show or another movie based on different characters that were introduced. There is potential. I just think that in terms of like enthusiasm they now created or didn't create for part two, it might also be an instance where not much more will come out of it, maybe some more. But I think the world of Oz itself, like we discussed in our main episode, there's a lot there or has already been a lot of spin-off material of some kind. So maybe with a bit of distance, Oz will come back in a different form because it's been around for almost 100 years. And looking at the novels, I think it's close to 100 years with the Frank Baum novels. So yeah, there's ample potential. But looking just at Wicked as a two-movie experience, I would just let this rest for a while now and hope that Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo will have other chances. Maybe not to be together on the screen, but who knows? But to pursue the career and to build on this. And I mean, they were great in both films. I don't think it's their fault at all. They didn't lack the energy or the talent. Yeah, I see a great career for the players, but I don't hope they will try to take this on, like continue this on forever.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a reason why the credits don't end with kind of black screen and then white writing going like, Elphaba will return in a broom to die for.
Yeah, the genre-bending sequels. I mean, as I said, Joker Folie à Deux made it into a musical, so maybe they can make this into a dark or goth action thriller next.
Exactly. Okay, well, I think we've done pretty bad things to Wicked for Good. It's rare for us to be this negative about a film, but I think we needed to kind of somehow bring this to a conclusion with part two of our December podcast. Thank you very much, Sam, for discussing the film with me and for giving me a chance to say a couple of things about my own take on Wicked.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Because it felt like, you know, we could have spiraled upwards into the heights of the skies of Oz, but now we kind of spiraled downwards into the pits of doom. And that's also fun. You know, it's great to sometimes have to trash a movie or something close to that.
Absolutely. And let's wave from our balloon crashing down into the abyss to our listeners. Thank you all very much for sticking with us. This was our December espresso. You will hear from us once more before the end of the year. In the meantime, have a good time, happy holidays, and thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Merry Christmas, everyone.